And we'll start here. Maybe the obvious answer is just for everyone to get through this and be healthy, but how would the NHL define a successful season? Like, what to you would mean success this year, Gary?
For me, success starts with keeping everybody safe and healthy. That has been and will continue to be paramount. But on a more granular basis, if we can play our regular season in playoffs and have another successful season in terms of fan engagement, whether it's in person or via media platforms, and having a competitive, entertaining season that our fans are going to enjoy, that'll be what it's all about. And frankly, you know, I think when you look at everything we've been able to accomplish, a lot of it virtually, a lot of it under very difficult circumstances, I think the clubs, the players, all the NHL off-ice personnel have a lot to be proud of, because we did what had to be done to keep the game going, and we've come back even stronger. Mm-hmm. I think we have something like 17 new sponsors or renewed sponsors. We have two major new U.S. media partners. Virtually all of our buildings should be able to play to 100% capacity at the start of the regular season. And our players, with the exception of maybe a handful, five players, are all vaccinated voluntarily. All of our officials are vaccinated, and all of our off-ice personnel who come in contact with the players are vaccinated. So our players and everybody associated with the game and our fans coming into our arenas can feel good about how we've addressed the circumstances that we've been confronted with.
You know, we've heard numbers like $4 billion, perhaps as lofty as $5 billion, as potential financial targets for the league this season. Are those numbers out of whack? Are they in the sweet spot of what the NHL is thinking? Where does 4B and 5B come into the equation?
Really good question. For the 19-20 season, the one that we took the pause on in March of 20, we had been projecting to do about $5 billion U.S. In revenue for that season. We are anticipating, subject to things that nobody's anticipating, being in excess of that number and being well into $5 billion U.S. for this season, assuming everything is normal. We are coming back stronger, or as strong as when we had to take the pause and had to play an unusual season last season. But the vital signs are all very, very good, very strong, and all of our franchises are in good shape.
You know, and speaking of franchises, I am curious about Seattle and what this organization means to the bottom line for the NHL. I mean, so far, listen, they've hit all the right notes. Like, Seattle has been, you have to be like the ultimate cynic to find something that Seattle has misstepped. The marketing has been great, the logo, the look, all of it. What does this franchise mean to the NHL's bottom line, Gary?
Well, you know, it's to the league's bottom line, it's just another franchise that's going to be successful, not unlike Vegas. You know, we had a lot of skeptical people when we decided to expand to Las Vegas, and skeptical both, you know, from the media and other leagues. And then everybody saw how well the Vegas Knights were doing, and everybody started talking about, and the NFL actually put a franchise there. Seattle, as you said, has hit all the right notes. They have a great arena. They have great ownership. It's a terrific sports market that has really embraced the Kraken in a big way, even before they had played a game. It creates a nice geographic rivalry with Vancouver. And so it's just going to be another expansion of our footprint in a place where a franchise is going to do very well. You know, we've talked about this over the year. When you look to expand, you look at the market, you look at the arena, you look at ownership, and you look at, will this make the league stronger? This will make us stronger. It will take us to yet another market, a major market, And it will give hockey and the NHL an even greater presence, growing presence than we have.
With Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, you mentioned Vegas and their goaltender over the weekend raised a lot of eyebrows with a series of tweets. It started about Jack Eichel and went all the way to the Philadelphia Flyers. We know that Leonard's had a conversation with the Players Association and the NHL has, correct me if I'm wrong, offered Robin Leonard the chance to be interviewed about some of the things that he said. Can you give us an update on what the NHL's position is vis-a-vis Robin Leonard right now?
Well, we take his comments seriously, and we'd like in very short order to be in a conversation with him so that we can hear his concerns directly. And we're going to follow up to see what merit there may be to his concerns. I mean, you don't have to tweet to get our attention. We have an 800 number that people can call. So you can call us directly. We're an open book. But if he has concerns, we want to hear them and then see how they need to be addressed.
I am curious, how often do you talk to individual players? Like, we know you talk to owners all the time and you sort of exist at that level of the game. How often do you talk to players?
Pre-COVID, whenever a team would come into New York, it wouldn't be unusual when they're doing media and coming to the league office that I would have a private session. We'd close the door and talk about anything. And that's something I've tried to do on a regular basis. And I talk to players and reach out when there's a milestone, when there's a reason. And so the lines of communication are always there, and players know that I can reach them. Lots of players are walking around with my cell phone number.
Mm-hmm. Jack Eichel is another issue, speaking of individual players. And I was just talking to Elliot about this in the segment previous and making the point that this is a situation with a very significant player. You know, he's one of the best players in the world. I don't have to tell you that. Everybody knows that about Jack Eichel.
Absolutely.
And this is one of those situations where it's bad for everybody. It's bad for the Sabres. It's bad for the Pegulas. It's bad for Jack Eichel, Kevin Adams, their fans, the NHL, USA Hockey in an Olympic year. Like, nobody benefits from this situation at all. And I know, Gary, that you want to respect the CBA. And I understand that. But is there anything that the NHL can do to bring an end to this situation that, as I mentioned off the top, is just flat-out bad for everyone?
Well, most importantly, we're focused on Jack's health. And there seems to be a legitimate, I know there, Elliot had some speculation about whether or not we should or have been involved. And we're pretty up to speed in terms of what's going on. And there's a legitimate disagreement among doctors as to what the course of treatment would be best, both in the short term and the long term. And that's something that everybody's wrestling with. It's a terrible situation. I don't think it's fair to point the finger at anybody in terms of who's right or who's wrong. I think everybody's approaching this with the best intentions. And the injury is complex, both in its diagnosis and its treatment. And I think people need to be a little more patient because it's good for anybody. But most importantly, we've got to focus on collectively and worry about Jack's health, both in the short term and the long term.
So there isn't a sort of good for the game card that the commissioner could play to end this tomorrow?
No, it's really what's good for Jack. And I can't tell you medically right now as we're speaking what the best course of treatment is. And that's really what this is boiling down to, what's best from a medical standpoint.
So spoke to Bill Daly in Chicago at the NHL-NHLPA Players Tour. And, you know, one of the things that he sort of laughed about was, you know, you can't answer any question that doesn't fit into the context of the pandemic or discuss, you know, we're making this decision under the umbrella of the pandemic situation, COVID-19, that we're all living under. You know, in broadcast, we've had to pivot as well, as you know, given the realities of, you know, access and being available, whether it's in studios and ranks, et cetera, we've had to change. Is there something as the NHL now transitions back, Gary, to a quote unquote normal season that you look at and say, we didn't want to be forced to change this way, but we learned a few things about ourselves and how we can do business, and we're going to keep doing it this way now? I guess what I'm asking is, are there any, because I think COVID sort of hit fast forward on everyone's lives. Like, were you going to get to something in 10 years? Well, now you got to it in two. Is there anything that you did by way of practices that you were forced into doing because of the pandemic that now is just going to become a matter of everyday life in the NHL?
I think what we learned during the pandemic was you have to be flexible, you have to be adaptable, you have to be focused on whatever your priority is, even if it changes by the moment. So in terms of health and well-being and safety for everybody, that was something that was very clear. You know, some of the changes, particularly from a media standpoint, and even from a business standpoint, can we be more efficient in some of the things we do? What kind of access is necessary? But what we also learned was that our players were really great, particularly on digital social media platforms, in reaching out and being more accessible to fans who wanted to feel connected to the game even more during a difficult time. But I will tell you a little bit of an anecdote. You know, some of your colleagues, when going back to when we first were about to take the pause, we said no media in the locker rooms because we were trying to regulate it. And I was doing a scrum in Florida the weekend before we actually took the pause on the night that Roberto Luongo's number was retired. And somebody said, well, you just barred us from the locker rooms as an excuse for COVID. You're never going to let us back. And that's not true. We want to get back to complete normal in that regard. And I said, and it was a scrum of about 40 people packed in pretty tight, as you know how those scrums are. And I said, what you're not appreciating is what's coming with COVID. And frankly, if any one of us has it right now, we're all going to have it within the next week. And I think that people are much more conscious of and being self-aware in terms of what's important and what the priority is, and being able to adapt to whatever situation you're confronted with.
Over the summer, I went back and I watched the 1993 Stanley Cup Final. So the Los Angeles Kings and the Montreal Canadiens. This was your first cup as commissioner. And, you know, the first thing that strikes anyone that watches it is how profoundly different the game is now. Yes. And where the accents are placed and how the game is played and what the athletes look like. Like, there's so much that's different since you joined the NHL in the 93 season. So we know how the game has changed. How do you think you've changed since 1993?
You mean other than having gotten older?
Time is undefeated, Gary. Like, I'm the same too.
Yeah, but actually, it's interesting. I think there are only two active players now who played in the '90s: Joe Thornton and Zdeno Chara.
Chara, yeah.
So the game has gotten younger. I think we listen, when I took over, the gross revenues for the league were, going back to your initial question, were $430 million for the entire league. I think as a game and as a business, we have evolved. I think we serve our constituents better than ever. The way that people can connect to our game is more intense and more available than ever before. You can basically get what you want, when you want it, how you want it. More games are being televised better. More games are being streamed. Didn't even exist when I took over. Email was in its infancy. The iPhone hadn't been invented yet. And I think we've grown the game in every way imaginable, on every platform, whether live or in person, whether the fact that we're in more places than we've ever been. There are more people playing the game than ever before. There are more people watching and connecting the game than ever before. How have I changed? I've tried to evolve, and I think the organization that we've put together at the league level and at the club level has helped make this game faster, younger, more skillful, more competitive than ever before. I guess, you know, getting more personal as you get older. Hopefully you become more self-aware and you're more comfortable in your own skin than you've ever been before. And I'm very comfortable with how the league has grown and how the league is perceived and how great the game is. You know, particularly I hear from retired players that the game has never been better. And that's something that I think we can all take pride in.
You know, that sort of leads to this next question, which is, you know, Gary, what do you still want to do? Like, there's a, I'm paraphrasing an old proverb that, you know, society grows when we plant trees under whom, you know, shade will never sit. When you look at, you know, still what's still on the horizon for you, like, what interests you? What do you still want to do in this league?
Well, you know, it's interesting because this is actually a pivotal point in time to be focusing on that, because we're still dealing with the implementation of everything that we've had to accomplish in the last 18 months. When we start the regular season, it'll be 19 months to the day that we took the pause. So what did we do? We completed one season in two bubbles. We had to play another season under difficult circumstances, which included alignment. We had to keep everybody healthy. Oh, by the way, so in addition to realignment, we had to have protocols. We extended the collective bargaining agreement by 4 years, so we have 5 years to run. We entered into two new U.S. media partnerships in what may have been among the most difficult television and broadcast and content marketplaces there's ever been. And we've had to digest it. And by the way, I had to get everybody from a league office standpoint, as the teams did, back to work because people were working remotely. And so we're still digesting and processing everything we've had to accomplish, including, as I mentioned before, 17 new or renewed business partnerships. So what I want to do is get us back to normal, and then I want to use the opportunity to continue the great growth that we've had over the last two decades, to continue to make this game the worldwide juggernaut it is and can be even bigger.
You know, in the and we'll conclude on this one. Coming up in the second hour, I'm going to talk to Kirsten Welsh. She's an OHL official, the first female official in the history of the Ontario Hockey League. And as we try to open more doors and elevate and share platform, you know, I'm sure she has eyes, as anyone does, whether you're a player, whether you're an official, a coach, whatever, eyes for the NHL. How does that happen? How could that happen for her?
Well, actually, it started, and one of the things that we are focused on, and I think we've done a good job on it, and it's worth mentioning, and that's being more diverse and more inclusive. No matter what your background, no matter what your gender, no matter who you are, we want the game to be a more welcoming place where more people want to play the game and more people want to be fans of the game. Kirsten and a number of her contemporaries got their start through Stephen Walkham, who heads our officiating, mm-hmm. as I think everyone knows, creation of a combine and a mentoring program, particularly for women. And she came through that program, and another number of other of her contemporaries have, who will be working in the AHL, the OHL, WHL. And that's something we're encouraging. And whether or not you're a male or female or official, you go through the hoops that have to be accomplished in order to work your way up in the hierarchy of playing the game. And the best officials, no matter who they are, will be given an opportunity to advance and ultimately, hopefully, accomplish the dream of working in the NHL.